You're listening to the Isoca Journal podcast. In this edition of the podcast, we're speaking with Steve Ross, author of the journal's Information Security Matters column. His Volume 5 column is titled Stanley Baldwin's Bomber. So, Steve, let's begin by discussing the historical comparison you use in this column. Can you explain the Stanley Baldwin's Bomber analogy and how it relates to security?
Stanley Baldwin was arguably the worst prime minister in British history. He's pretty much forgotten. He was succeeded by Neville Chamberlain and then by Winston Churchill, and those names are, ring in history much louder than his. But he did say during the debates over rearmament in the 1930s that there was no reason to spend money on security because the bomber will always get through. And that's where that phrase comes from. The concern or the consideration that I have and why it got me to this point is in talking with the CIO of a global law firm. I asked him, what are you doing about protecting yourself against cyber attacks? And he said, you know what? Basically, I'm not doing anything. I want to make it so difficult to get into my place that they'll go bang on the door next door, because after all, there's nothing I can do to stop the, and I'll use the term, the Fredonian army. It wasn't Fredonia, but for fans of the Marx Brothers, they'll know who it is. And to me, that defeatist attitude is something I run into very often in dealing with clients who are trying to put their heads around the whole cyber security environment that we need or that we have in our times. I think we need it more than we have it. And so I tried to take that defeatist attitude and turn it on its head and say, okay, if you accept the fact that it can't be stopped, then what would you do? What are some of the things you could do and should do? And with that in mind, I made recommendations, always using Stanley Baldwin and his fallacious argument to effect. And we know, of course, that less than a decade after he uttered the words that the bomber will always get through, that the Royal Air Force knocked down an awful lot of bombers. So the lesson learned, I suppose, from history, and I think there are other lessons to be learned from history, is that if you are going to start out saying that we can't be secure, then you need to protect what can't be secured, or that you've got to turn your back on this defeatism and start building up protections that are strong enough that at the very least, if the bomber does get through, you're in a position to recover from it.
How has the growing use of personal devices affected how hackers and attackers work? And how does this in turn affect how security professionals should respond?
I abjure the word hacker in this context. A hacker is some pimply-faced kid in his father's garage. I'm talking about organized, directed, targeted attacks by governments and criminal organizations that have enormous resources and plenty of time and patience. So let's not talk about hackers anymore. That said, one of the things that I mentioned in the article is that it would be ideal if you could put intrusion detection systems at every endpoint so that anything trying to enter your system is going to be checked. That doesn't exactly work with the proliferation of endpoints. I mean, I walk around with a laptop and a tablet and a cell phone in my pocket, any one of which could be a data entry device for some system somewhere. It's not practical to say, well, you're going to protect every endpoint. So what you need to do is funnel everything towards secure gateways, towards some sort of unified security checking. In an article in the journal written by my colleague, Eric Beck, he talked in terms of, and I have also in my articles talked in terms of zero trust systems, zero trust architectures, in which everything passes through points where they can be checked in depth. We have the tools for that today. They're becoming increasingly important. Next generation firewalls is the general term for it, but it is a great deal more than just a firewall. It's a unified security device. And as you raise in your question, the proliferation of devices that can get into the system require more and more strategic use of these unified systems, these network firewalls, that will plug the gap and make everything come through a secure point. Have we achieved this universally? Obviously not. That's why there seems to be a cyber attack of the day. But we're getting there.
And what precautions can organizations take to protect their most sensitive information?
It's what I call hiding the crown jewels. At one level, the most secure thing you can do is not to put the most critical information on a computer system that is accessible externally. That sounds great. You know, in theory, that's perfect. In reality, it's not the world we live in. You don't put critical information on a standalone computer that you have to come up to and access physically in order to get to it without going through a wide area network or the internet. So where does that leave you? If you've got sensitive information and it's sitting out there waiting to be attacked and stolen and destroyed, back it up and encrypt it. The lesson learned again is that if you want to stop the bomber from hitting something that's really important to you, hide it.
In your experience, have organizations been resistant to implementing these kinds of changes? And if so, what are the reasons for this resistance?
At the most elemental level, anything that we're talking about to provide even more security than we needed, say, 10 years ago before cybercrime was a thought in anybody's head, it costs money. And companies are everywhere. I mean, I've never known a period in good times and bad where a company said, sure, take all the budget you want. We got no problems. We're made out of money. Never happens. So what happens is that companies try to evaluate their risk. And the risk management approach, as I've said in previous things I've written, the risk management approach does not necessarily talk to the issue of cyber attacks and cybersecurity, in as much as the risk management is based on the perception of what is to be protected and the value of it. And you say, well, there's X probability that anybody would come after our organization and our data. We're just a little organization. Why should we spend that kind of money, et cetera, et cetera? When in fact, when we're talking about the issue of cybersecurity, it's not the issue of the assets at risk, but rather of the threat. As I said earlier in this conversation, there are dedicated criminals and governments that are trying very hard to get into organizations by whatever means they can. And sometimes it sounds silly, but there's documented cases in which I'll try to make this as general as I can. A highly secure organization used to order sandwiches from a nearby deli using the deli's online system. And so all the cyber attackers had to do was go after the system at the delicatessen. And they crawled back up into this secure organization through that route. Who would have said, what's at risk for the delicatessen? Nothing, a couple of rye bread sandwiches. What's at risk is their customers. And in the interconnected age in which we live, Mr. Baldwin's bomber can drop his bombs anywhere and still cause collateral damage.
Thanks, Steve. And that's all we have time for in this edition of the podcast, but be sure to read Steve's Isoca Journal Volume 5 column titled Stanley Baldwin's Bomber.